Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of spiritual awakenings, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and ways to go within to find your true self. And today I am delighted to welcome Nancy Van Dyken, author of Everyday Narcissism, Yours, Mine, and Ours. Hello, Nancy, and thank you for joining us today on Healing From Within.
Hello, and thank you for having me on.
Nancy, as listeners of this show have become aware over the years, my guests and I share intimate experiences, insights, and growing awareness for our emotional, spiritual, and physical realities, hoping to know actually a little bit more about the human condition and to find ways for better self-investigation and for mastering our emotions for greater movement towards self-actualization and higher consciousness. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Nancy Van Dyken, a licensed psychologist and clinical social worker working with couples, parents, and teens with depression and anxiety, will share a clear definition of narcissism and talk about the five myths that are the focus of the book while offering ways to build boundaries, suggest healing activities, and show us how to recognize the differences between everyday narcissism and clinical narcissism. Nancy, I always love to begin each show by asking my guests to think back to their childhood and to remember a person, place, or event that may have shown them or others the adult or life path that would be embraced and which was already present in the child and would show it was a strong determinant of the adult you would become. So think back for a minute.
Well, I think both my parents, my father in particular, was a very loving, a very kind, yet very principled man who was willing to speak his truth and live by his values, whether it was popular or not. And although he was known to be a very loving individual, he also stood up when he didn't think things were right. And maybe it would go against a whole bunch of people or maybe just a few. He would do it with graciousness, but he would do it. And that was a good role model for me.
Excellent. And, you know, my dad was a little bit like that also. He was quiet, but when he had something to say, and it needed to be said, he would say it. And, we want to encourage our listeners. You know, it's not about what you just said, Nancy, was that he was kind. So when people are kind and they have something to say, they do it in a way that's not hurtful, or they don't blame, they don't judge. They just make an observation, and it behooves us to think about it for a while, and perhaps it can shift some of our perceptions, which ultimately could be holding us back from greater happiness and awareness of ourselves. So we need those kind of people in our life. People who
Absolutely.
Can express themselves. That was beautifully said. Now, this is the first and only book on healing everyday narcissism, which is an extremely common condition. So tell us something about your background and how you decided to write this book on narcissism.
Well, I've been a clinician for 34 years plus. And the way I practice is I look at patterns that people get into, and the patterns that aren't working for us, I give homework to help people change those patterns, because if they already knew how to change them, they probably would. And a lot of it is the naming of those patterns. So back in the mid-2000, maybe 2008, I was doing some national speaking, and that's when I first used the term narcissism. I used to speak on codependency, and I realized how narcissistic codependency was. And so that's sort of where it all began. I would say that this book has a lot of me in it. It's a lot of my own healing process.
As all of us,
So,
the writer,
yeah.
you know, is speaking
Yeah.
most truthfully from their own experiences and awareness. So that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So let's go on to the foreword of your book, which talks about neglecting ourselves. And then, of course, there may be some who do nothing but focus on themselves. So either one is not a good way to go. We want to come somewhere in between, in the middle, find middle ground.
Yep.
So tell us
exactly
about how people neglect themselves.
Oh, it's pervasive. Myth three is everybody's needs are more important than my own. So we learn to ignore what we want and what we need to please others. And we do this because, as Adler said in the early 1900s, 1918, I think, he broke away from Freud and said, our basic drive in life is to belong, to fit in, to be liked. And I believe that that drives most everything we do, from the car we drive to where we want to live, all our hair, our clothes, everything. We just want to fit in and be liked.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a social rule. Number four is of the myths. Is social rules are more important than I am. And there's an unspoken and spoken rule that says you always need to say yes when somebody asks for help. And so one of the hardest pieces of homework I'll give people is I'd like you to say, no, that won't work for me, three times this week. And that might take someone 6 to 9 months to be able to say it once.
You know,
for that.
Yeah, you remind me, when I was younger, my dad used to say I was my own worst enemy. And he said, Cheryl, you're going to have to learn to say no. But I never wanted to. I always wanted to say yes and help people, because it was within me, that was part of my destiny as a Reiki energy healer and medium. I do a lot of good in the world. And I was like that as a child. So, but I have learned what he finally meant by saying no. So I wish someone would have said that to me and given me that homework assignment when I was a lot younger. So,
well, it's about learning to say it with graciousness.
Yes.
And kindness, I think. And the example I often give is if we have this feeling that we need to say yes, so it's sort of an automatic response. And then 20 minutes later or 3 days later, we say, why did I agree to that? I can't believe
mm-hmm.
it, blah, blah, blah. And it's not uncommon for people at work to say, yes, they'll help an office mate, when in fact they're already buried themselves.
I know.
Much better for them to learn to say, Susie, I'd love to help you. However, I'm buried myself today. If I get my stuff done, I'll come over and see later in the day if I can be of service to you.
Excellent.
So I care about her and I care about me. And that's what true caring is.
Well, you know, true caring is also, like you said, most people want to go from not feeling well or happy to a state of love and safety and comfort. And all
yeah.
our actions are based on that. So we humans, I think you said this in the book, take extraordinary measures to feel safe, even sacrificing awareness of our truest selves in order to follow explicit and implicit rules. So you give a great story of the cat who can't read, right? And even if you punished him or withdrew from him or used your best skills to teach him, he still would be unable to read. And imagine how the relationship would be affected, because he's trying to live up to your expectations. And many parents
right.
do that with their children. And they
absolutely.
And they create a great deal of trauma and stress.
Harm.
Yeah, and a lot of harm. But let's go on to, do we demand the impossible out of ourselves and others, and why?
Demand the impossible. I'm not sure what you're leading to.
Well,
go ahead.
We may have a struggle with relationships and authority and be struggling and not aware of the energy that these struggles can cause. So we just keep going and doing things that, as you say, might be good for someone else, but might not be in our destiny or life plan. So we're really hurting ourselves by doing that. It's a struggle. It's like the struggle between love and hate, and insisting and resisting, and hiding and open compliance, all these different dichotomies or dualities that we get engaged in. So I think that's what I was thinking there. But we are very hard on ourselves sometimes. And sometimes we're, yeah, go on, tell us about that.
Well, that's because out of all the myths, myth five is unless I follow all four of these lies, these four myths. Myth number five is I have to follow them, or I'm not lovable. I'm not likable. I won't fit in. And our drive, as you said, to be emotionally safe, physically safe, and to belong, is so imperative that we put burdens on ourselves because we don't count ourselves. We don't say we matter. And when I start to get people to count themselves and look at what they want, they feel so selfish and they feel so guilty. And of course, that's one of the great lies out there, is that to care about yourself makes you an unkind human being. And with truth, that's where you're going to have real kindness. So I have a whole chapter on lying to survive.
Well, that's why 2,000 years ago, a spiritual teacher, I'm not exactly a very religious person, but I am spiritual and I understand the universal laws of energy, which help us to be healthy in this physical life. He said, love yourself as you love your neighbors or your enemies, because it's all about that openness and that ability to know there's no right or wrong. The dichotomy, there's really only basically compassion and love.
But when you're criticized as a child, so oftentimes for myth one, which is I have the power and the responsibility to control how others feel and behave. So if I'm five and the family tradition is that we give family members hugs and kisses goodbye, and my mom says, now, Nancy, who's five, go give grandma a kiss goodbye. And I say, I don't want to. She just hurt my feelings and I'm mad at her. Now, Nancy, go give her a hug and a kiss goodbye or she'll feel bad. So there I am. I'm five. And I've just been told that how I feel doesn't matter. Myth three. I'm also told I'm responsible for how grandma feels. And I'm five. And I know that if I don't do it, my mother will get angry because that's what's happened in the past. So now I have to control my mother's temper because if my mom gets upset, then my dad's going to get upset. And I'm five, and I have to take care of all three of those adults if I want to belong, if I want to be loved. So we learn at such a young age that it's not okay to think about what I need and how I feel and what I want. And since that desire to belong is so profound, it's so profound, I learned to stop listening to it. And it's that wisdom, that guidance within us, that will bring us to the wholeness you talked about, I believe. That's that, whether you call it your spirit guide or your God or universal energy, that wisdom will lead you, but we've learned not to listen to it. It's frightening to listen to it because we won't be accepted.
Absolutely. And you tell that story just now of the little girl who didn't want to give her grandmother a kiss. And the other day at my office, I was sitting there and there was a young boy, and the grandfather said to him, well, say happy birthday to this person. And the boy said, no. He was maybe 3 years old. And I wanted to say, I wanted to say something. I had just read this story of yours, and the grandfather says, "Don't you want to grow up to be a good man? Then you
Oh
have
my
to
gosh.
learn to do the right thing." And he still said no. And I sort of said something to the mother, not to the grandfather, said, "Well, you know, he's a little young to understand. It's like children under 5 can't really share yet. They sit and observe and watch, but they play
Right.
by themselves." So it was
Right.
the same. And she understood the mother, and she understood just what was going on. So it would behoove parents and educators and people in the medical professions and psychologists to get a handle on telling people not to have so many expectations and to do so much
Well,
damage to their children. They don't
and you
mean
see,
to,
the
of
grand,
course,
no, of course not.
but
But you
it.
see, that was the grandfather wanted to make a certain impression on you about his son. So the son was, grandson was supposed to take care of grandfather in that situation.
Absolutely.
And the problem that I've seen with young girls then is they learn their body doesn't belong to them. They have to go hug and they have to go kiss. And so when they're 16 and that boy wants to go a little farther with him sexually, they're really torn because they don't want to. This is my body, but I'm told it doesn't belong to me. I'm supposed to make him happy and grandma happy and mom happy. So girls oftentimes have a hard time saying no in that situation because of this type of training. And grandpa has no idea what he's doing. It was done to him. And his intention is wonderful. It just harms the child. Plain and simple.
There would have been an easier way to do it. You know, if you would like to say happy birthday, and the
Right.
child may have said no, and then the grandfather might have said, "Well, I understand. Okay.
Right.
Well, you have to do what
Right.
makes you feel comfortable in this moment." And you know what? We don't
Yep.
teach our children to express how they feel. And they need to do
No.
that. And adults need to do that too, also, because we're bottling up all these emotions. And at a cellular level, it's being retained. Every word, every action, every thought has an energy vibration. And
Yep.
sickness and dysfunction come from this inability to really release what needs to be said. And as I go back again to the word you started with, kindness, when things are done with love and kindness and well intentioned, nobody will
Yep.
ever be offended. But let's go on to this is very important. Define narcissism and then clinical narcissism and then everyday narcissism. There's quite a difference between the two.
Well, your everyday narcissist is a garden variety form of narcissism. It's like the difference between someone who says, boy, I've been really depressed for the last couple of days, and the person who has to go into the hospital for depression. I believe all narcissism is based on wounding. And the more wounded you are, the more narcissistic you are. The more wounded you are, the fewer of your needs that got met. So you're always trying to get your needs met all the time, inappropriately so. So I'm trying to demystify narcissism and stop demonizing, because people who are really narcissistic, I believe, are just incredibly wounded people. And they're ineffectively trying to get their needs met of feeling important, of feeling counted, of feeling heard. And that's why they're the center of attention, and they have to always be right. They're quick to temper and that sort of thing. The everyday narcissist is more of a pleaser. Is more concerned about being liked than the center of attention. But those five core beliefs that we've talked about are really what are so destructive in our lives. And what I have found for myself and for my clients is when they understand those beliefs are lies, I rarely get hurt anymore. Because I know that what other people do is about them and how they've decided to handle the world. For instance, in my father's kindness, I only heard him raise his voice to me once in 38 years. And that's when I started to go towards a table saw and I hadn't unplugged it first. And all he said in a firm voice, and he was 6'2", was, "Nancy." But he made a decision a long time ago that he would not ever use anger in a cruel way. Name calling, swearing, blaming, that sort of thing, getting loud and intimidating. Other people made the decision that it is okay to name call and swear and get loud. So if someone swears at me and gets loud, that has nothing to do with me.
Absolutely.
That has to do with a decision someone else made on how to manage their hurt and their anger. You couldn't have gotten my dad to swear at somebody or call him names no matter what. He just wouldn't do it.
Because he was acting from his inner sense of authenticity, his soul sense, and he was comfortable within himself. I always tell my clients and my grandchildren and all the children around me that nobody can really hurt them. If they act badly, it's because something is disturbing them, and it is their choice, but they have to hold on to their own sense of well-being and happiness and simply, you know, wish that those upstairs, maybe in spirit, help that person who's so unhappy and not engage, disengage from that kind of behavior. That's what we need to do in order to keep our own balance.
Right. I just started working. A client I've seen off and on for 20-some years came back in, and he has terrible anxiety. So I was giving him some of the Buddhist teachings that I have about present time and not writing stories and non-attachment. And then I gave him these five myths. Mm-hmm. And he just texted me the other day. And he said, "Nancy, I heard someone lie to me about why they decided to cancel coming to my house for dinner. And for the first time, I did not take that personally. I realized that his need to lie was about him, and it had nothing to do with me, and I wasn't hurt, and I went on with my evening." That was a lot of freedom he received within himself to not take on somebody else's issues.
Absolutely.
He knew it wasn't about him. Yeah.
So your five myths helped him greatly. And while we're talking about the five myths, I have them written down here, which they are the focus of the book. And as I was telling you before the show, I sat down with my four granddaughters, and I had each of them and their mother read one of these myths because we discussed them, and they're only young children. But these are things that I say to them in other ways, and once they have this understanding within them, they'll be much safer and happier, and they'll be able to know the truth of what people are saying to them and what they need for themselves, and know when to say no if that's necessary. So can you tell us the five myths?
The first myth is, I have the power and the responsibility to control how other people feel and behave. Myth two is basically, you have the responsibility and the power to control how I feel and behave. Now, that dynamic in a marriage really messes things up because
it's not
your
true,
job
and
is,
it's not true, and it's not right.
Your job is to make me happy, and I'm mad that you're not doing it.
Mm.
Myth three is, your needs are more important than mine. Myth four is, social rules are more important than I am. And myth five is, if I don't live my life by all these rules, I'm not likable, lovable, kind. You could read them all off. I don't remember them all. So since our desire to belong is so huge, Adler said it was the third thing after
physical,
food, shelter, and clothing.
Yes, after physical
and
survival.
And safety. Mm-hmm. Safety is two. And then three, of course, is love and belonging.
Well, let me look at myth one for a minute. I want to say to our listeners how ridiculous it is to think we are responsible for and have the power to control how other people feel and behave. That's myth one. And I wrote, as I'm an intuitive healer and medium, and I'm aware of the universal laws of energy and the fact that we as spiritual beings having a physical life, I'm grateful I have learned that each soul is unique and has its own life plan, experiences, And all of us are just on this journey to redefine ourselves and refine our energy. I want to thank you, Nancy Van Dyken, author of Everyday Narcissism, for sharing wonderful insights into an extremely common condition, everyday narcissism, that limits happiness and that most people are not even aware of. For more information and to purchase this book, go to nancyvandyken.com or healingrelationships.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have explored everyday narcissism, which we all experience through an indoctrination or process in early childhood training, learning and following the five myths that perpetuate thoughts that we must adhere to, and we must adhere to many unnecessary rules which have us caring for others while often not caring for ourselves. And that stifles joy and our need to learn more about ourselves and to create boundaries that allow us to respect, trust, and create lives that are filled with meeting our own needs, our life plan, and honoring our intuitive inner nature. Nancy wrote, "In practice, most of us are not taught or encouraged or permitted to name our feelings and discuss them. Instead, we are taught to hide and ignore them. And in many cases, we eventually pass this lesson on to our own children. The result is that most young children experience feeling rejected, excluded, or judged by adults for not knowing or following adult rules and expectations. Yet often these rules and expectations are not reasonable or realistic for people their age. Nancy and I would hope to break this destructive cycle, which sadly turns out to be the case for most parents and their interactions with their children, and to allow more parents to understand many of the five myths that still pervade our everyday life, which leads to everyday narcissism and alters the true nature of each soul, to experience first and foremost good feelings of self and a world of possibilities and beauty. Let's begin by observing what is right with life rather than what is wrong. For a positive, open-hearted approach would be most welcome and beneficial to all. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, and invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about the world of energy, emotion, and physical life as we explore and merge a clearer understanding of the dual nature of mind, body, and spirit for a healthier, purposeful life journey. Shows may also be heard on WebTalkRadio.net and DreamVision7Radio.com. Thank you.